Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Hour number two, Jeremy White, Joe DiBiase, now joined on the Wester Hotline by Mr. Sal Capaccio. Hi, Sal.
What's up, man?
Still recovering from Sunday? We haven't talked about you were on the sidelines. You would have been in the sun, too.
I was. I guess kind of recovering, if you will. I am. I tell you this, I got like sunburnt. I feel that on your head, you know, my bald head, you know, so I feel that a little bit. It was bad. It was brutal. It was bad for everybody out there, but I can't imagine for the players of 10 times worse, obviously, and 100 times worse, whatever. But I will tell you that, you know, for anybody who thinks that like, oh, you know, it's hot and you've gone through hot games before and things like that. That was my eighth time on the sidelines, I guess. 1 year we didn't travel. On the sidelines in that stadium, not all games were in September. There have been plenty of them. There's been early season games plenty of times. That's the worst I've ever experienced it. And I will tell you, even on the sidelines, we were all checking on each other. Like photographers, staff members, workers, you know, the security, just like, hey, you doing good? You doing good? You need any water? Anybody? Like, that's the way it was, Joe, because everybody was dealing with it. And then you look over and you just realized, you know, how tough it was on the players to have to fight through all that through the whole game.
Sal, after a season last year on the sidelines here in Buffalo where it was tough, and then this game, the Heat game in Miami, do you think that the Baltimore game, if it is a rainstorm, would you rather have that than what you had in Miami?
Like, personally? Are you talking about just, like, personally what I would rather go through?
Sure, sure. Like, you think,
I'd rather have the Heat than stand in the rain.
You could deal with
the
Heat. But you think the team would probably rather have the rain?
They might, because, yeah, I think you're talking about their body and their performance.
Yeah,
right?
Talking about what you've got to be out in the elements for.
Yeah, because I think the difference, Jeremy, is, sure, you don't want to play in the rain, and it could impact your play because you could make mistakes, but it's not going to impact your body and cramping and IVs and fluids and throwing up, right? I mean, that's their body is, you know, their moneymaker. That's what they do. You know, it's how they make their living. So I would say that as much as the rain would suck, the wind would suck, at least it's better than going through what they went through as professional athletes and their bodies deteriorating on them, which is what their number one thing is to take care of, to keep making on. For me, I'd rather go through the heat because I could at least go in the tunnel and find shade. Now, I could do that in the rain, of course, but you know, for the majority of the game, I have to be out there and it's coming down. It just gets wet and your clothes get soaked and things like that. So I don't have to deal with all the things they are. By the way, just speaking of weather, just want to say, like, woke up this morning, I'm watching all this stuff going down with Ian down there. Lots of friends and family right where this thing is going. It's now going to be almost a Category 5. It's just, we have a lot of listeners down there, guys. I don't know if you guys know this, but people call. They say that they live down there, Tampa, Fort Myers, Port Charlotte, all that area. We get a lot of Floridians who listen. So, you know, I know that the listening WGR is not the thing they're worried about today, but, you know, we just... Obviously, we're thinking about everybody down there because this is a monster, and it's going to be pretty devastating.
Yeah, 10-foot storm surge, I think I saw, in the Tampa area.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and Tampa is actually north now of where it's going. It's actually going directly pretty much where I used to live and where my parents used to live, and, you know, they're moving back to Buffalo, and, you know, they have friends down there. We're all watching it intently. Anyway, what you're talking about, though, the weather next week in Baltimore – it's going to be some of the remnants of this. It's going to be Ian. Ian's going to come through there, and it's going to go right up pretty much the southeast, and then you're going to get some weather from that. We'll talk with Patrick Hamer more about this on Friday, but the timing of it could obviously slow it down, and maybe it's not the case. But the rain and wind you're talking about on Sunday is pretty much going to be a little bit associated with this.
It's a curious time to have this happen with these two teams specifically, Sal, as we start to transition in the week from the Dolphins loss to looking ahead to the Ravens game. If it's raining and if it's a downpour, your mind immediately goes to, okay, that means more running, and you're not going to be able to throw the ball 63 times like Allen did last week, or the Ravens won't be able to do it as much as they're doing with Jackson. And suddenly, right, two teams that have been asking their quarterbacks to put capes on and carry them are going to have to go to run games that have, for both teams, really been non-existent.
Agreed. I've thought a little bit about this. Like, who does it benefit? I'm not really sure, because if you have to keep the ball on the ground, well, guess what? The best runner in the game plays for the Baltimore Ravens. His name is Lamar Jackson. You know, in this particular game, like any mistake, like if you're gonna run it more than throw it throughout the whole game with both teams, that could be a look what happened last year, where New England, they ran the ball so much, all they needed was that one run to make something happen, right? And yep, that's what happened. At the same time, you know, maybe it benefits the Bills, because I think the Ravens have relied so much on their passing game, and they have thrown the ball down the field and been more of a vertical passing game than the Bills, that maybe that slows that down a little bit and takes away their ability to make the big play in the air, which they have made a lot of this year. So, I think it, you could go either way on it, I guess, the way you think about it right now.
Yeah, with the Bills, Sal, you know, they might be, as you're describing Baltimore there, it almost describes the Bills a bit too. If they can't push the ball down the field, the efficient passing game is still there, of course, but the run game, right? What is this, year two or year three of talking about the Bills' desires to run the ball more efficiently? And now with new offensive line coach Aaron Kromer, yes, they've got injuries on that line. Maybe the Miami game was a result of that. But do you get the sense that here we are, and they're talking in that building about, we have to find a way to be better, more efficient running the football without Josh Allen being the one that carries it?
Sure. I think any time that, you know, you see what's gone on the last couple of weeks where they really haven't been able to lean on that run game as much as they wanted to at certain points in the game, I think that's the case. I think it's especially shown up in the short yardage situations. Right? I mean, they're just not good in short yardage runs right now. They're not converting on third and shorts and fourth and shorts when they run the football. They've had several of those this year. So I definitely think that, Jeremy. I think that they feel they have to be more efficient. I feel they have to be more probably more powerful, you know, at the point of attack. And, you know, it's something I was very excited about watching in preseason and camp. I thought they were great at it in preseason. They really did a nice job, but it is preseason. I still believe Aaron Kromer is a very good offensive line coach and very good for this. And one thing that I think could give Bills fans solace is, I'll go back to something that Eric Wood always talked about, which is Aaron Kromer is a problem solver. Like, having someone like that in your building is good for these situations where, okay, what's going on? What do we need to do? He's the kind of guy that can help solve that problem, at least to get you there. He's not just a position coach who knows technique. Like, he's a guy, he's been an offensive coordinator, an interim head coach, and he's very good at trying to figure out the X's and O's and the schematics of maybe trying to fix that. So I think having him in the building with Ken Dorsey and all the other coaches, I think, is a good thing here. So through 3 weeks, has not gone really the way they wanted to. I thought they ran the ball pretty efficiently against the Rams, but we'll see. I don't think it's panic time at all, but I do think it's something that they're probably addressing in the building, to answer your question, yes.
And last year, Sal, like, they were not in this by volume, but they were one of the more efficient rushing attacks in the league. A lot of that is Allen, but Singletary too, like, yards before contact, like, he was one of the top backs in football, and that's more an O-line stat than it is anything else. What, I guess, two-part, what is the explanation for so far? Is it injuries? Because they have had a rotating door through three games, it feels like. And two, I guess, what's the fix? Are we just waiting for Mitch Morse to get healthy? Are we waiting for other guys, Brown, to be able to stay on the field? Is it as simply put as they just need to get their healthy five back out there?
No, I don't know, Joe, because, I mean, other than Brown leaving last week, I don't think that they've really had any injuries to the starting five, right? I mean, Bates went out last week a little bit, but they've started each game and they've played the majority of the game with the starting five. It's the depth that's been tested more than anything. But, you know, I mean, you talk about I guess you're right. I'm sorry. I'm not even thinking about Morse because you mentioned Morse. Yeah, that was a tough one last week. Not having Mitch Morse definitely hurt them last week. So, you know, my bad. I forgot that, you know, he was out there. He was out last week, but you're right. That's part of it. I would say for sure, like, you think about losing your center. I think more than anything, it's just execution. It's just being better at what you're trying to do. You know, I don't know. I don't know if there's one thing. If you went to Sean McDermott or Aaron Cromer and said, like, what's been the issue? They'd probably run through a laundry list of things and say, look, we haven't done this as well. We haven't done this as well. Look, they also faced Aaron Donald week one, and they faced Jeffrey Simmons week two. Now, Miami didn't have that necessary strong front, but then you go to Miami game, that's when the injuries started popping up. So maybe it's just been a confluence of all those little events. One thing that's been interesting to me, I've seen them run more toss sweeps than I've ever seen them run. I don't know if you guys have noticed that. Mm-hmm. I've never seen them run this many toss sweeps under Brian Daboll. And I'm wondering, like, if it's just something that they're not confident in running between the tackles as much. Maybe it's because of who they've played against, and maybe because Miami was blitzing or whatever too, and against them. But it seems like they're trying to get to the edge a little bit more often on those toss sweeps. And, you know, I wonder if maybe something there, that going straight ahead, I guess, a little bit more often than going sideline to sideline on some of these plays.
We're also starting to see an uptick in James Cook, but only by a little bit. So I wonder if that might be something that happens throughout the season, of he gets a little bit more touches. And that's not really fixing, I guess, you would think, the inside rushing game that we're talking about. He might be the guy you would think gets those toss sweeps later in the season. But we'll see
it's also the guy that I think that if you think about breaking a long run or having the athleticism or speed to – you know, get to the second level and then do damage, it would be James Cook. Although, of course, Zach Moss had that run last week, right? Which, was that even a toss sweep? It might have been.
It might have been,
So, I think James Cook probably has to factor in here at some point. Again, it's 3 weeks in. I don't think it's anything to necessarily panic about. You know, but I bet you, and I would imagine it's something being talked about, especially because of this week, because of what we're talking about with, you know, the rain and the possible rain and the possible wind. For the game against the Baltimore Ravens. I'm going to look up right now, and I don't think the Ravens are great against the run. 26th in yards per play, almost giving up 5 yards a carry. They've given up 104 yards a game. That's 13th in the league, but they're giving up close to 5 yards a carry against the run. So, I mean, this is a game where maybe you can try to fix that a little bit.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
Go ahead.
I was going to switch to the defense into Xavier Rhodes. How quickly can they onboard Xavier Rhodes?
Very quickly, because he's used to Leslie Frazier's system, which is Sean McDermott's system, essentially. And as I've pointed out many times in years past about these kinds of signings, the reason you go get a guy who's been in the league a long time, he's gonna be in shape. Like, guys like that, they stay in shape. They're looking for a job. Seems like, you know, he wasn't a guy sitting around going, am I going to retire? It's more like, I'm looking for a job, right? So you go to a guy like that because you can bring him in. You know he's going to be in shape. He's going to take care of his body. So physically, he's going to be ready to roll. And then I think just from a schematic standpoint, he's been in these defenses. That's why you get him. He's familiar with Leslie Frazier. I think you could onboard him very quickly. Doesn't necessarily mean he'll play this week, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if he did.
If he were to not play this week or to be limited, are they at Jamarcus Ingram as the next corner that could even be starting?
Oh, yeah. I think as of right now, though, Joe, like, to me, if you were to give me, like, who's starting, I'd probably put Jamarcus Ingram in there. You still have to see Xavier Rhodes out there, right? You still have to see him do it. He's still got to kind of take that job and show that he can be on board and go, yep, I remember all this stuff. I'm in shape. You go out and you get the guy like that, you're confident in that, but you still have to do it. Jamarcus Ingram came in and played fairly well, you know, and he is the guy up. So, no doubt. To me, it's right now, it's Kyrie Elam and Jamarcus Ingram, and then, hey, is Xavier Rhodes ready? I think maybe that's what you're looking at. So,
yeah,
a big test here. Jamarcus Ingram. I don't know if a lot of people know Jamarcus Ingram from the University of Buffalo. You know, they have Cam Lewis, obviously, from UB, Jamarcus Ingram from UB. So, yeah, I think Jamarcus Ingram is probably, to me right now, the second starting corner opposite Kyrie Elam.
Yeah.
But I would think that they would at least give a look at Xavier Rhodes and what he could do, and you know how much he can contribute in the first week.
One other housekeeping question about the secondary. I had a couple of people ask me, both on the show, Extra Point Show yesterday, and on Twitter, why no Cam Lewis at cornerback last week or as an option going forward? My best answer, and I don't know this to be right, but maybe you can clarify, my best answer was, I think he was their only other person that could play safety on Sunday.
It's a good answer. I would say that's part of it, but the other thing is he's just not a boundary corner. He can do it. It's not really what you have him on the field for. His main position is to be a slot corner, backup slot corner to Taron Johnson, and he can play a little safety. So more than anything, he's the middle of the field guy. He's a slot corner. He's a safety. He's not really a boundary corner.
Okay.
I think when you have those options, you'd rather go with the options you have. You know, if you have Jamarcus Ingram, you already elevated him. Somebody goes down. That's a boundary corner. That's what he does. So you put him in there. It's a good question, though. Maybe it could very well be this week they work him in there, right? I mean, maybe you have a whole week of thinking, okay, we're without Christian Benford. Let's get him some more reps over there. Same thing with Saran Neal. I was asked a lot about Saran Neal. Why is he not playing safety? Why is he not playing outside corner? Well, Saran Neal's really more of a box slot guy, box safety, big nickel, I guess you'd say. I mean, that's really his role. Plus, he plays so many special teams, and it's super hot, and you're trying to keep as much wear and tear off everybody as you can in the heat with rotation, so you got to have. And then they were losing special teams guys. I'm sure that was part of it with Cam Lewis as well, by the way. Cam Lewis, Saran Neal, think about the guys as they're going down. You know, these guys are playing special teams as well. You're trying to keep everybody as fresh as possible. I think there was just a lot of things that went into last week's game. But now you reset. You say, okay, let's reevaluate the roster. Can we put Cam Lewis on the outside? Can we put Saran Neal in there? It would not surprise me, Joe, if in Baltimore, maybe those things happen a little bit more because you've kind of had a chance to reset the roster and figure out what you want to do with everybody and where they belong.
All right, Sal. We'll wrap with the devilish question that Jeremy posed me at the end of the first hour. Let's say, hypothetically speaking, that the Bucks and Chiefs got moved instead of to Minnesota to Buffalo on Sunday. Sunday night, who would you be rooting for?
The Buccaneers. Mm. The Chiefs losing to an NFC team is like, yeah, I mean, the Buccaneers winning would be emotionally maybe a bit bad for some people, but how could any Bills fan not want the AFC team to lose to the NFC team?
Might be one of those things where you walk into the stadium thinking you're going to root for the Buccaneers, and then you see Brady, and you just go, okay, I can't do this.
No, so the question isn't the question isn't if you're rooting for the Bucs or Chiefs. The question is, can you root for Tom Brady?
Right, and my answer to that is no. Unfortunately,
under any circumstances
is,
ever.
I mean,
the good news is, Sal, like on the one seed conversation, the Bills are already up again. Or no, so the Chiefs are 2-1 also, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's an AFC against NFC game. Come on, man.
I couldn't do it. I could not do it.
I appreciate it. I appreciate
it.
Just can't do it.
I could not possibly.
Wow.
Nope. I couldn't do it. Maybe I'll just stay home.
What about could you root for the Bucks to win a low scoring game where Brady does nothing well?
You know what? Okay, yes.
Well, that's kind of what they are now.
Yeah, that's right. That is right, yeah. You promised me he's going to throw three picks, and yeah, okay, all right. Okay.
He'll get no credit for the win. It's all about Tampa's defense.
Okay, I can get on board with that.
Okay. Have we ever had to root for him for any reason? Have we ever had to root for Brady where, like, oh, they need the Dolphins to lose?
No, not really, right? Like,
I don't think so.
The Bills were never in a position for the wild card in the final game of the year.
Yeah, okay, right.
The entire drought, so, no. Yeah.
No, that's right. All right. Thanks, Sal. We'll talk, of course, coming up at 10 a.m. We've got a Baltimore guest. We've got a referee guest, too, right?
Yeah. So I'll be down at the stadium. We have Sean McDermott at noon. So I'll be down there with you, Joe, from 10 to 12. You'll be there where you are. But yeah, so coming up, we have Bo Smolka. He covers the Baltimore Ravens. He'll join us. And John Perry, who is the Monday Night Football analyst, who is a former referee. He's going to talk about, we're going to ask him about the Josh Allen spike play, if you will, or non-spike play at the end of the first half, about Isaiah McKenzie saying he couldn't run out of bounds backwards to stop the clock, but maybe that's not true or incorrect how the process works at the end of the game. We'll ask him about the Tua situation from a referee standpoint. So there's a lot we can get to just from last week alone.
Beautiful.
One more thing, Sal. The Christian Wilkins dust-up with Allen. You mentioned with us yesterday that Eric Wood has said that's the fastest way to lose respect in the league, right? Because what Wilkins did to Allen, grabbing him there. And Allen on Kyle Brandt's podcast still kind of played it calmly, said, I've got to be better in that spot. I can't let my emotions get the better of me. And I guess I just wonder why players, if that is such a thing, which of course it should be, that'll make you lose respect, why won't they call the guy out directly, publicly, aggressively for that kind of behavior?
That's a better question for Eric Wood. My guess would be they don't want to become the story for this.
Sure.
I'm sure it's been talked about. I'm sure it's been talked about in the locker room.
Maybe a little bit of
the players,
frontier,
coaches.
A little bit of frontier justice, like he'll get his out there from
yes,
opponents.
100%. Exactly. Okay. And Josh Allen wants to be a leader and let his guys serve it and focus on the next game. And if that starts happening, it becomes, oh, they're worried about what happened in Miami. He's worried about, oh, he's crying about it. Like, you know the way it goes, right? You're going to get that. And I think the Bills are all about, let's not let any of those things happen. Let's make sure we go forward. But I could pretty much guarantee you, without being there and knowing for sure, I just know how it works. Those things are being talked about in the locker room.
Right. And, you know, that's the kind of thing where
and they play him again.
Right. And someone might ask, what about a suspension or a fine? And the reality is that seeing that in those piles is probably pretty difficult to confirm claims of that action.
Right. And the Melvin Ingram kick as well.
Yeah.
That's on video.
That one seems easy to prove.
Yep. That's right. And I would think that that's going to be something they all remember and know about when they play the Miami Dolphins the next time around. But in the meantime, they're going to think about the Baltimore Ravens and kind of push that aside and not have it a part of their story this week.
All right. Thanks, Sal. I'll talk to you coming up at 10 o'clock in the Extra Point Show.
Okay, guys.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. When we come back, we did this a little bit yesterday. Are the Bills using Josh Allen too much? Let's even get some calls on this. 803-0550 is the phone number. Are you worried about the Bills using Josh Allen too much? Let us know what you think. Better to Forget It coming up at 8:30. Joe Marino before that, of course. Locked On Bills and the Draft Network coming up at 8 o'clock. Jeremy White, Joe DiBiase here on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.